My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, the thing is, I want to learn. And as it turns out, I work with people who know a lot about classical music. Every week on this show, one of my coworkers will give me a homework assignment, a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today to teach me all about chamber music and what it's like to be in a wind quintet is the Houston-based wind quintet, WindSync. They have accolades numbering in like the 100,000s. You guys feel free to tell me about some of them, but So they come from all over the world, as it turns out, but they met here at Rice University's Shepherd School of Music, where they formed their quintet, and they have become wildly successful. They've been touring since 2009 all over the place. Why don't you guys each introduce yourselves?
Sure. This is Garrett Hudson. I'm the flute player in WindSync.
And this is Aaron Tai. I'm the oboe player in WindSync.
This is Tracy Jacobson, and I'm the bassoonist.
I'm Jack Marquardt. I'm the clarinet player.
And my name's Annie Hochhalter, sometimes known as Annie Hochhalter. I play the French horn.
Welcome to the Classical Classroom. So what will you be talking to me about today? I know we're going to talk about chamber music, but I think each one of you has like sort of a topic that you'd like to talk about. I want to know mostly about trashing hotel rooms while you're on tour and what that's like. We can also just continue to talk about Miley Cyrus if you guys want to do that.
Yes, our specialty, really.
They're actually related to each other.
True.
One of the incredible things about being a chamber musician is there's so many elements going on behind the scenes. And so today we want to share some of those elements with you and the listeners of Classical Classroom.
Well, the wind quintet, the repertoire that we are able to choose from isn't as extensive as say the string quartet, which is obviously the most famous of chamber ensembles. So what we do as a group, of course, we kind of pick from some of those selections. But we have two resident arrangers in the group that also help to expand the repertoire for our group, for the Woodwind Quintet. Maybe Jack or Tracy could talk a little bit about that.
It's all you, Jack.
This is the Overture to Candide by Leonard Bernstein. It was originally written for orchestra, and I kind of took it and boiled it down for us five plus a percussionist, who is Graham Francis. You're listening to?
The cool thing about us doing lots of arranging is that literally like nothing's off limits. So it's like when we sit around and think about what music do we want to play, it could be anything. And like any, you name it, like that piece has been mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like pop music, orchestra music, everything, anything.
When you are taking a piece like this and you're translating it into the instruments that you guys play, is that a difficult process?
There are a lot of different things I have to think about when trying to translate the music for string players into music for wind players. The most obvious is the range issues, which notes are too high for us to really handle, sometimes too low. So to take into account all five of our different ranges is probably the biggest challenge.
One of the interesting things about arranging is the idea of tessitura, which is kind of a musical term that's tossed around from time to time. But what that actually means is kind of the character of each different part of the range. So if you think about like a violin playing way up high, it gets this shimmery, beautiful, light sound. Whereas you could have that exact same note on the flute, and it would sound very loud and piercing and penetrating just because,
hey, watch it.
Because of the tessitura of those instruments.
Huh. Like tessitura. Okay.
Yeah. And so so that's one thing that's really important in arranging, because sometimes there'll be a beautiful violin solo that's just very light and delicate. And if you were to give that to, even if it's in the same range as the French horn, it's not going to sound like it did on the violin just because they're the same notes.
Watch it.
But you know, there's a lot that can be done with that, because if you take, you know, a violin solo and maybe you put it down the octave and you give it to the oboe, it might have that same feeling, even if it's not exactly the same notes. And that's what's kind of more important to capture in an arrangement, is the feeling of the music rather than the exact notes.
Also, like that, what we're kind of talking about, like how instruments feel different ways. And as a wind quintet, we're very inspired by that because we like to include elements of theater. And for us, because we each sound so different, we each portray very different characters, or can portray very different characters. And this is all playing on those elements of, like, the feelings and the images or the colors that you feel and see when you hear the various instruments. So, like Erin, the oboist, like, she is the duck in Peter and the Wolf. There's just no way for Garrett to be the duck. You know, his flute just does not sound like that. So yeah, so we like to play upon that.
So take me through a performance. What does it look like on stage when you guys are all standing there? Does someone lead? I know you said that you have a sort of preternatural sense of each other.
Well, like, first like we all increase our auras.
You power up.
Yeah. Actually, we don't have a leader, but we kind of do. In a lot of settings, Garrett, who is standing, I guess if you're looking at the stage on the left in kind of the most front position, mm-hmm. he uses the end of his flute for cueing. So even though he is not actually conducting us, when there are moments that we need to be together and there are, you know, moments that are important for us to feel the time, he actually will use his flute to show
very,
us that.
Very similar to the baton of a conductor.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm just there for comfort. The flute player is just doing it for comfort. Whether or not we're all following each other, I'm not sure. I actually think that aside from just leading the cue for everybody to enter together as a chamber ensemble, we're all kind of moving and communicating at the same time. Mm-hmm. It would seem that the flute player is really cueing it, but I'm almost expecting the same from the other members that are standing around me.
Absolutely.
When I saw you guys play live, I did notice that you moved with the music a lot. You moved to the beat of the music. I saw some swaying and some
for
like...
Sure. Yeah, Jack gets really, really into it.
Yeah,
lots of squats.
It's a good workout, definitely.
My hips don't lie.
Well, the thing is all five of us, actually musicians in general, as a chamber group standing on stage, we're a little bit more free to be very physically emotive. If you look at an orchestra, a lot of the times, I find if you kind of direct your attention to the wind section, you'll see a lot more stillness amongst all of the members there.
It's a tough like place to be in an orchestra where you don't want to offend anybody by moving
or draw
around
too much attention.
But with us, we want all of your attention.
So when you see me moving a lot, it's to get all the attention on me, basically. So along the lines of that question, we actually do somewhat of a hybrid arts type of performance sometimes, where we'll either add choreography or we'll be adding costuming or just extra musical or visual things to our performances. It just adds just a lot more kind of an electric feeling to a performance when you're just kind of seeing something on stage that is so bizarre and almost unacceptable, but really quite wonderful.
Yeah, about a week ago, we just got back from Vermont, which is apparently the tango capital of the U.S.,
of course.
Who would know?
Obviously.
Obviously. So we were invited to study tango, traditional Argentinian tango, by Hector Del Curto, a bandoneon player, which is similar to an accordion.
But yeah. It's not.
No.
But it's not.
Do not call it an accordion.
Not
to a bandoneon player.
No.
It's a far more sophisticated version.
Yes. But it is an incredible instrument. Anyway, so we had been playing the music of Astor Piazzolla, who is probably the most famous of the tango composers in the classical music world. And so he approached us kind of asking what we knew about traditional Argentinian tango and how that informed our musical decisions when we were playing Piazzolla, to which he responded, "What?" which, you know, it's great to kind of champion other types of music, mm-hmm. and it's not really necessarily possible to be an expert in everything that you play. But when the opportunity came and he said, well, I would love to invite you out to Vermont to learn about tango, traditional tango and the roots of tango, and to work on performing traditional tangos. And so we went out and spent a week there playing tango and learning how to dance tango, and watching videos of tango orchestras and tango dancers for, gosh, it must have been like 8 hours a day. It was really intense.
That's a whole lot of tango.
It was a lot of tango. but we came away with this new ability of how to make these tango sounds on our woodwind quintet, which sounds kind of like a silly thing to say. I guess it is a little bit of a silly thing to say. But, you know, as Ani is talking about the character of our instruments, they all have these unique sounds. And tango has a very unique sound unto itself. And so when we came in at the beginning of our week, we were playing tango like a wind quintet, which...
It wasn't pretty.
Which makes sense. It was not sexy.
No.
It was the opposite of that.
I mean, we sounded good. We're in tune, you know, all the good elements
we
as a musician.
Together.
Very
we're
classical. Together.
Yeah, very classical.
But
just the style
it just
of it.
Didn't sound like tango. And so what we did, Hector worked with each of us to kind of embody different parts of the bandoneon and tango orchestra sound. By the end of the week, we were making all of these like really different sounds that you would never use to play.
We had to abandon all reason and all, you know, classical training on our instruments in terms of how you produce a sound or in terms of how you play a phrase. And that was tough at the beginning of the week.
Yeah, and like as like creative artists, there was definitely like a period of kind of rejection that you felt too. Like maybe for some of us longer than others, where like you're like oh, you're like almost offended by the sound that came out of your instrument. I can't play like that. you eventually come around.
But at the end, we went for the feeling of the phrases and the feeling of the bass lines and the feeling of like having the knowing how tango dancers dance, and you try to portray that with your instrument, and that's how we achieve at the end.
Yeah, so you kind of have to let go a little bit.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the music that you guys did.
Great. This music, Gallo Ciego, is is not like the music of Astor Piazzolla, and that was meant to be danced to. It wasn't meant as, you know, concert music. Whereas Piazzolla's music is meant for the concert hall, and he wrote it for classical musicians to play. But Gallo Ciego is traditional Argentinian tango music, and so I guess the possibility to be able to know more about that, bring that into our repertoire, is incredible, and it also helped to inform how we play now Piazzolla.
You guys can't see this, but they're all dancing along with the music.
Well, so in this recording, we're standing still, but a few days of this tango residency were actually dedicated to us walking or dancing while we were playing this music. Because Hector was just insistent that we embody physically the way this was supposed to sound. So we're kind of all launching into our movements because we actually learned this music while moving.
One thing that was amazing about tango that we really didn't know, but it's based on a walk that's kind of like a swagger. Mm-hmm. The men kind of walk forward and the women walk backwards in heels.
Oh,
so Ani, Aaron, and I, we brought our heels and practiced this like very even, just elegant step.
It wasn't elegant at first, actually.
Well, no, it wasn't elegant in the end either. but it was supposed to be.
Mine was elegant, okay.
Mine was too.
My heels were also the shortest.
but it's one thing that we really had to try and work on with this music was to capture the idea of walking, mm-hmm. Motion. But it's not a march. It's not...
it's really flowy.
It's really
and
fluid.
Elegant. Yeah.
It's actually really interesting, too. They brought us in, and we were the very first group to do this tango immersion, and we find out at the end that they were all skeptical that this would even work. like, they all were like, this is never going to work with these wind instruments, because in a traditional tango orchestra, there aren't these instruments. It's strings and a
maybe
piano.
Maybe a flute.
Maybe a flute.
Mm-hmm.
Which I actually found kind of... I wasn't as skeptical simply because of my ignorance, but... A bandoneon makes sound with wind. It's a reed and it's the movement of air across the surface that makes the sound. So for me, I was like, well, we're like,
it's a wind instrument.
Yeah, great. Not traditionally, but anyway, so it made sense to me. But then, as Jack was saying, the short notes, because the air movement is the jerk of his arm.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what's so, and it can be so much shorter than the quick exhalation, like through my chest and making this surface mm-hmm. vibrate of my lips, like I just can't like snap it the way his arms can.
Right. I think what's interesting about our conversation today is how much the physicality of playing instruments has come up, and how important that is to playing with a smaller group. And this seems to be an extension of that, the tango music. Like, do you think that it improved your communication as a group? Like doing this sort of different thing?
Definitely.
Yeah.
We were all starting at zero. We had none of us any expertise, and so to have this experience together, where we were able to learn something from scratch all together, was actually entirely unique. We all had, you know, going into this group, lots of classical musical training. And when we sometimes branch out into, I guess, other subgenres of classical music, someone usually knows something about it. But this was not the case here. It was a big bonding experience, actually.
So you sort of deepened that sort of, just sensibility between all of you?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And for us to be relevant and for us to kind of be sustainable as a group, it's very important for us to kind of set the bar higher than it's already been set, and to, essentially go and do things that haven't been done yet. and just kind of go above and beyond what the concept of what a woodwind quintet is capable of doing at this point. So the opportunity to go and do this residency with Tango was kind of the perfect opportunity for us to take another step in that direction.
Well, you guys, I hate to cut off our conversation. I have so many other questions that I want to ask you about touring and Miley Cyrus and all that.
Trash hotel rooms.
I really appreciate you taking time to be on the Classical Classroom. Thank you so much, and best of luck with everything you've got coming up. Everyone, if you have a question that you would like to hear addressed on the Classical Classroom, please send me an email at dclay@classical917.org. If you want to find out more about our show or hear past shows or see what's coming up next, go to classical917.org/classroom. That's it for this show, and thanks for listening.